بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله محمد.
When it comes to studying religions, different religions, the number one place that we go to understand what a religion is all about, what defines that religion, what the core beliefs of that religion are, it's the book of that religion. There's no doubt about it. And there's another thing that there's no doubt about, and that is that the religions that have endured and lasted till today are the ones that had books that have remained till today. Now, I don't want to get into whether or not Islam believes that those are the exact same books that Allah revealed unto the prophets of those religions, to the great figures of those religions. That has nothing to do with what I have to say right now. But if you want a religion to remain and to survive, there has to be a book in that religion that will remain. No matter how great the person who brings that religion is, the prophet who brings that religion, okay? Or that great figure, individual, guru, sage, whatever it is that brings that religion, if he doesn't have a book along with him, something that will stay after he leaves this life, that religion will slowly, slowly either totally deteriorate and just be gone, or no, to a good extent. There will be nothing left of it except the name of it. Even the most smallest religions that we have out there today, the ones that don't have too many adherents, when you go and look into them, you see that they have something written down somewhere, a scripture somewhere, something to fall back on and rely on. And that's why anyone who wants to study any religion, they go first to the book. Now, with the Muslims, unfortunately, we have forgotten this notion. We've forgotten that we have a book. And we have even forgotten that not only did Allah send a book that will be next to other books, like the Old Testament and New Testament and what have you, not only is He going to send a book like those books, but He's going to send it as a miracle of Islam, of the Prophet. It's not a normal book. For example, the New Testament is a book that, yes, us Muslims, we believe that is not the exact book that Prophet Isa alayhi salam was sent with. But at the end of the day, it's a book that remained till today. The Quran is also a book that remained till today, but Allah went out of His way, so to speak, to make it a miracle also. To make it in a way that today, I've even heard that they say these Muslims have a book that you can't touch it. You can't touch this book. We can't do it, so what do we do? We're going to go and meddle with the interpretation of it. We'll change other things about it, but you can't touch the book itself. The scripture is the exact same words that were revealed unto their prophet, as they say. So this is the Qur'an we're talking about here. The importance of the Qur'an now is something that we've forgotten. Now surah, this is a verse that we've all heard, Surah Furqan verse 30. Talks about how the Prophet on the Day of Judgment will complain. The Prophet is complaining about his people, his qawm, that they abandoned this Qur'an. Now, this verse is talking about the Prophet on the Day of Judgment, that, oh Allah, on the Day of Judgment, the Prophet will complain to Allah that these people, they saw the signs. They knew it was the truth. The Qur'an in other places says they turn away while they know it's the truth. They knew it was the truth. They turned away from it. They abandoned it. He complains to Allah on the Day of Judgment. But these are the mushrikeen that he's complaining about on the Day of Judgment. How does this apply to us? Well, we're doing the same thing that those mushrikeen did. The problem with us is that we claim to be followers of this prophet, of this book, but we don't really know what's going on in it. So in a way, the Prophet's complaint applies to us as well, his complaint to Allah, that they, إِنَّ قَوْمِ اتَّخَذُوا هَذَا الْقُرْآنَ مَهْجُورًا. They abandoned this Qur'an. The disbelievers abandoned it. If the Prophet was alive today, he might say, my followers also abandoned it. And that's where the doors to all superstition and extremism and taking it all hard when it comes to religion. All of these come. You open the door to all of these things when you don't stick to the book. But sticking to the book has a method. There's a way of understanding it that I'll talk about inshallah. The good thing about the Quran is you don't need to go to the graveyard to remind yourself that there's an akhirah, to remind yourself that you're going to be leaving this life. And this is one of the most important aspects of the Quran, that it keeps repeating again and again and again that, listen, you've got a good life going, everything is good for you. Sometimes I feel sorry for some of these celebrities, because they are these athletes that are like super rich, is because they've worked their existence off to reach what they've reached, and mashallah, they reached some good wealth. But I just watch, and especially growing, when you grow up in a third world country, you can see this easier, you see it better. When you're growing up here, you kind of forget sometimes. You look at this guy that's all happy, and he's flashing the Benjamins, and he's just tossing them around. You're like, that's good, and it's good for you, that's good for you really, but it's not fair, because you spent all this time and you got what you wanted, but it's not going to stay. I mean, this is one point that atheist, Muslim, Hindu, Christian, Jew, everyone accepts, is that we're going to leave. We're going to leave this life. Quran keeps reminding us that, listen, you're going to be leaving, you're going to be leaving. That's one of the most important aspects of the Quran, that we're encouraged to recite every day in Ramadan, in the month of Ramadan, is that it keeps reminding us of what we're supposed to be doing, of what the reality is. It keeps us in check. This is how important the Quran is. Imam al-Ridha alayhi salatu wa salam, it has been narrated that he used to read the Quran, finish it every 3 days. Alright, the point I want to make is important through this account, that he would finish the Quran every 3 days. And then, so now you're thinking, oh, he's an imam, he should be able to do it every day. Well, the imam himself answers this question. He says, if I wanted, I would do it faster than this. But the reason why I don't is because I don't want to, because I rather sit, and when I recite, I think over it a little bit. When I come across verses, I think about, okay, why was this revealed? When was this revealed? The occasion of revelation, that Sha'nun Nuzul and so on. They say Imam Ridha alayhi salam, when he would come across those verses that talk about Jannah, he would ask Allah, oh Allah, give me this. He would do dua for those things that he would recite in the Quran. When he would come across those verses that talk about the hellfire, he'd say, oh Allah, while shedding tears, he would ask Allah for him to not experience this ever. This is the Quran we're talking about. This is the importance of the Quran. It keeps us in check. Now, if that's not enough for you, I want to share something with you that I found very interesting, and we can all relate to. We're always talking about Ya Sahib al-Zaman, come back. Ya Sahib al-Zaman, I want to see you. Right? I don't think there's anyone in the crowd who has not asked Allah for this. I want to be able to see the Imam at least once in my lifetime. Right? And it's not something bad. I'm not saying it's something bad. But look at the point that one of our greats has made. This is the late and great Ayatollah Mujtaba al-Tahrani. A mujtahid, a faqih, right? With proper Islamic backbone, faqih. Not lecturer. Faqih. Faqih means a person who, when he talks about Islam, you can take what he says. Credibility. An expert. But he was known for his mysticism, his spirituality. He was a spiritual wayfarer. That's what he's known for. He says, and I'll read the quote for you. I translated it from Farsi to English myself, so excuse the translation if there's any errors. About the Qur'an. He says, we have this concept, the al-insan al-kamil, that the earth always has to have at least one insan al-kamil on it, the complete human being. The one that Allah, when He wants to do things in this world, He does it through them. The same way Allah needs angels to do things, not because He's weak, but because this material world can't take the power of Allah, angels do things. That same way, there has to be an insan al-kamil, at least one on the face of the earth. Because at the end of that chain of media, okay, which is the plural of medium, Allah does things. And that's why ahadith say that if there was two people left on the face of the earth, one of them would be hujjah, one of them would be the hujjah of Allah, and so on. These are all referring to this concept. Anyway, so we have this concept of al-insan al-kamil, the complete human being, which is the ma'soom of the time. Until Mujtaba Tahrani, he says, if the complete human was to be in the form of writing, maktub, it would come in the form of the Qur'an. The same way Imam Ali was the human version of the Qur'an, al-Qur'an al-Natiq, the speaking Qur'an, that we call him. Okay, I don't know how many of us have heard this before. Al-Qur'an al-Natiq, the walking Qur'an, if you may. The opposite version, if you're going to say that if the insan al-kamil was going to be in written form, he would look like this. It would be the Qur'an. Okay, both sides of the coin. If you're going to have a ma'soom in the form of writing, it'll be Qur'an. If you're going to have the Qur'an in the form of a human being, it'll be Imam Ali alayhi salam, and the ma'soomin, and the Prophet, of course. Alayhimu salatu wasalam. So, he goes on to say, now if the recitation of the Qur'an and reflecting over its verses doesn't touch and change our hearts, I should just not continue this. Have no doubt that meeting the complete human, the ma'soom of the time, the imam of the time, will not change our hearts. If you want to see what state you will, this, I don't know why I'm reading this. I don't know why I'm continuing. If you want to see what state you will be in if you meet the 12th imam, see how you are when you are sitting with the Qur'an! Exclamation point. If you are eager to be with the Qur'an, you can be happy that you are really eager for the imam too. Or else, if the Qur'an is mahjur for you, something you don't care about, something you don't connect with, something you're turned off by, and you have no bond with it, and you think you are eager for the imam, then that is not the imam you want. That is an imaginary version of him that your mind has created. SubhanAllah. So before asking to see the imam, we have to fix things up. We have to fix things up. But now, in our defense, the reason why we are sometimes not attracted to the Qur'an that much, we can't develop a bond with the Qur'an, is because we don't understand it properly. And that makes perfect sense. Not only do we not understand it, I'm telling you this right now, people with perfect Arabic, who know the Arabic grammar, syntax, everything perfectly, they still don't understand the Qur'an sometimes. What do I mean? Just because you know the translation, just because you know all of the rules for understanding Arabic, doesn't mean we will understand the Qur'an. I don't like to say you will understand or you will not understand. All of us together, we're all one. Okay? There's no reason for me to separate myself from others or say you or we or whatever. It's us, all of us. Because the Qur'an is a book full of secrets. The Qur'an is from Allah. We don't understand. The greatness of Allah, however much it is, the Qur'an will be that great. Only those who have reached a certain level understand the greatness of the Qur'an. We can't expect to know Arabic perfectly, although many of us don't know that. And this is something we're going to have to work on in this community because we're all Arab here. Well, all of you, I personally am not Arab, but many of us are Arab. But I was surprised that not many of us can recite the Qur'an very well. And this is something we have to work on, inshallah. It's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with this, but to not address this is a problem. Okay. For example, I have like, today I sat down, I was like, you know what, I'm going to come up with some examples. And the list just kept going on and on and on. I don't know if I'll get through all of it, but I'm going to give you lots of examples today as to what I mean by this. That the person knows Arabic structure, sentences, grammar, syntax, morphology, they call it, sarf, nahu, all these things, they know it on one side. On the other hand, they also know the definition of all words and Arabic terminology, they have all of that down too. Still, we get stuck with the Qur'an. Still, we can't connect with the Qur'an because we don't understand. That's where tafsir comes into play. As I go on, we'll get what I'm trying to say, inshallah. For example, Ya ayyuhal muzammil, the Qur'an. This is the surah we'll actually probably, inshallah, do tomorrow, from tomorrow. Surah al-Muzammil. What does muzammil mean? Okay, so let me explain. Although I might lose some of you, but muzammil, I know the morphology of it. I know the grammar of it. Muzammil is bab al-tafa'ul. It comes from mutazammil. And then the Arabic rules changed it to muzammil. It's ismul fa'il. Okay, so we know all that. I know tazammala, it means to wrap yourself in something and so on. I know that too. All right, good. So the Quran says, Ya ayyuhal muzammil, O you who has wrapped himself in clothing. You know the translation of it. You know what it's talking about? No. Why does the Quran say this? What does it mean by this? Ya ayyuhal muzammil. Is translation enough? Translation is not enough sometimes. Even right now, the brother was reading the translation of the verses before me. We thank him for that. But the point I want to make is here too, that we don't get what it's saying. Death be unto the philosophers. قُتِلَ الْخَرَّاصُونَ. The verse. Alright, so like that means like 90% of the ulama will this verse is applying to them because they might have studied philosophy here and there. What does it mean? What is meant? Other examples. Allahu Nuru Samawati wal Ard. We all know what Nur means, right? Yes. So Nuru Samawati, Allah is the light of the heavens and the earth. Alhamdulillah, I just gained so much from this verse. Let's move on. What does that mean? Wait, hold, slow down. Nuru Samawati wal Ard, what does that mean? That means that is the sun God? Because he's the one who's lighting it up? What does it mean that Allah is the Nuru Samawati wal Ard? He knows what Nur means. He knows that in the sentence this is the position of the word and so on. But what does that mean exactly? We don't know. وَكَانَ عَرْشُهُ عَلَى الْمَاءِ Allah's throne was on water, or is on water. So we all know what water is, especially now, a few hours left till iftar. Especially me up here right now speaking. But what does it mean that Allah's throne is on water? Huh? I asked you. I personally don't know myself. I have to check this. I have to go look into it. These are things that come to mind. Another verse, in minkum illa wariduha. All of you are going to go to hell. At first glance, this is what comes from the verse. In minkum illa. None of you except that he will or she will be the warid of the hell. Warad. Warada. Warada means to enter someplace. They usually is used for this. Thumma nunajjil ladina taqaw. The verse goes on. Then we will save those who had taqwa in this life. Who listened to Allah, were obedient servants of Allah in this life. So everyone's going to hell. Then we will, you know, fish for those who were good people and obedient servants of Allah, and we will take them out of the hellfire. So that means, for a second at least, before they hook me and bring me out of there, I'm experiencing the hellfire. Please explain, what does that mean? Verse doesn't say anything. قُلْنَا يَا ذَا الْقَرْنَيْنِ إِنَّ يَأْجُوجَ وَمَأْجُوجَ مُفْسِدُونَ فِي الْأَرْضِ We said to ذَا الْقَرْنَيْنِ We said to the person who had two horns that go do this, go do that, and the story goes on. You probably heard the stories. The person with two horns, what does that mean, two horns? He had two horns. Where do I get this from? How do I understand what is meant by that? I know the translation of it. And then this Dhalqarnain, the verses that come after it, it says, when he reached the place where the sun sets, he found it setting, the sun was setting, in a muddy spring. That means the sun is going in a muddy spring. Okay? These atheists, when they want to hate on us and they want to find flaw, this is what they do. They go to the translation of the Quran, very simple, and they just find all those things that don't read with science, don't read with the aql and intellect and other things. While if they did a little bit of tafsir, a little bit of more detective work in the verses, they'd find the answers. They just don't want it. And that's why we're here. That's what we're going to be covering. Setting in a muddy spring. So here we have a problem. What does that mean? By that sunset or wherever the sun was setting, he found a people. We said to Dhul Qarnain, O Dhul Qarnain, O man with two horns, you may either punish them or treat them with kindness. Wait a minute. So a people that he's never seen in his life before, all right, say salam alaikum to them. Now you can either punish him or be kind to him, you know, randomly. Is that what the verses say? There's a reason I'm giving you examples, lots of them. There's lots. Every page of the Quran might have a couple of these. Something that doesn't read with Islamic theology. Something that doesn't read with science. Something that doesn't read with their aql. Something that we know is 2 plus 2 is 4, but then the verse sounds like it's saying 2 plus 2 is 5. Of course, this goes against the justice of Allah for me to punish someone that hasn't done anything to me or anyone else yet. I just got there. Assalamu alaikum. I just feel like punishing you today. وَعَلَّمَ آدَمَ الْأَسْمَاءَ كُلَّهَا Surah Baqarah. Allah taught Prophet Adam the names. Which names? What names? And then the verses go on to say, to call these names beings. They weren't just names. The pronouns that are used after that show that it's as if these were people. وَرَفَعَ أَبَوَيْهِ عَلَى الْعَرْشِ In the story of Prophet Yusuf, Prophet Yusuf lifts his mother and father on the throne, and then they خَرُّوا لَهُ سُجَّدًا They fell in prostration to Yusuf. This is one of those 2 plus 2 equals 4 ones. That of course, you're not supposed to prostrate to other than Allah. But this is the Qur'an that's talking here. How dare you go against the Qur'an? يُدَبِّرُ الْأَمْرَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ He directs the command from the heaven to the earth, then it ascends toward him in a day whose span is 1,000 years by what you count by. It takes 1,000 years for every single thing that happens in this life that we're in. The amr of it, the command of it, takes 1,000 years. What does that mean? I know I'm tiring you, but I have a reason for this. وَمَا رَمَيْتَ إِذْ رَمَيْتَ وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ رَمَى You didn't throw the arrow or the spear when you threw it. Allah threw it. That's another 2 plus 2 equals 4 one. You didn't throw it, but you threw it. This is like perfect contradiction here. Someone please explain what's going on in this verse. The verse doesn't say anything. But I have the translation. Not only do I have the translation of the Quran, I have 10 translations of the Quran by different people. The more you read the translation, the more you'll get lost, my friend, in these verses. Some people acknowledge this. They understand that translation is not enough. Some people, though, no. They do their ijtihad off of the translations. هُوَ الْأَوَّلُ وَالْآخِرُ وَالظَّاهِرُ وَالْبَاطِنُ He's the one, the first, the last. He's the inside, he's the outside. You're either inside or outside, my friend. You can't be inside or outside unless like 1 foot of you is on this side of the doorway, 1 side is on that side of the doorway. No. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, what does it mean that he's inside and outside? What is it talking about? أَيْنَمَا تَوَلُّوا فَتَمَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ تَوَلُّوا فَتَمَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ Wherever you turn, Allah's face is there. What is the face of Allah? And what does it mean that his face is everywhere? And one last one, which is, I like this one. I always like this one. I always like this story. It's about the hoopoe. Right? That bird, the hudhud. In the story of the hudhud, the Quran talks about, Prophet Sulaiman, that's one of the powers he had, that Allah had given him. He could communicate and understand what the animals would say to each other. So now here, the hudhud, it says Prophet Sulaiman was walking amongst his ranks, and he looks, he says, I don't see the hoopoe, the hudhud. Okay, it's a bird. I don't see him, where is he? He better have an excuse for not being here, or else I'm going to slaughter him. I'll punish him. لَأُعَذِّبَنَّهُ How dare he leave his ranks, which is interesting right there, like what does that mean? But that's not the interesting part. The hoopoe comes back, and the Quran says it sat far away. Okay, I don't know if he was afraid, but he sat far away from Sulaiman alayhi salam, and he says, "Listen, I just came back with very important news. In other words, don't kill me." What is that news? He says, "I have brought you from Sheba, which was a land, Saba, in Arabic it's called, with a definite report. I'm sure about it, 100%." I found a woman ruling over the people of Sheba, and she has been given everything, and she has a great throne. Okay. I found her and her people prostrating to the sun instead of Allah, and Shaitan has made their deeds seem beautiful to them, decorous to them. Thus he has barred them from the way of Allah. Okay, this is stuff we've always heard, but from a hoopoe? What does it mean that a hoopoe is giving some great ma'arif and explaining some great ma'arif and Islamic teachings that we hear from the mimbar? Hoopoes even know it. And now he's relating all of this to Prophet Sulaiman. What in the world does that mean? And he knows whatever you hide, Shaitan got in their way so that they don't prostrate to Allah, who brings out the hidden in the heavens and the earth. Allah, who knows everything you hide and whatever you disclose. Allah, there is no God except Him, the Lord of the Great Throne. And he goes on and on, the hoopoe. So someone's got to explain all of this. Point being, that's enough examples. Point being, there's lots of mystery in the Qur'an. Lots of stuff we don't understand from the translation. So on one hand, it's very important, and I gave you that, what Ayatollah Mujtaba Tahrani says. On the other hand though, the problem is that we don't understand all of it. So how can we have a connection to it? I'm sorry, just racing through the Qur'an in Shahr Ramadan isn't going to give us that feeling that we're talking about. Or even reading the translation will get even more lost. I told you, people who know perfect Arabic and know definitions of all words will still get stuck. I gave you the translation of all these verses and there's many, many more. Anyone who's interested can come after the lecture. I'll give you more. Right? How are we supposed to connect that? So right here, let me answer a question that might come in the mind of some of us, and then I'll get to the answer of how can we connect to it. Okay? So follow with me, inshallah. A question here comes in parentheses, okay? This is a parenthesis I'm opening up here. That if the Qur'an is a book for all people, is a book for all mankind, is a book of guidance for everyone, it is supposed to guide everyone to the true path, then why is it that there's so many of these things that you just read and there's so many more, and you say every page might have two or three of them? Why is it that the Qur'an is full of these these things that cannot be understood properly? This goes against the Qur'an being for everyone. This goes against the Qur'an being a book of guidance for all people. So, what do you have to say about that? What's the answer to this question? It's a good question. But the answer to that, they say that the Qur'an is a book of guidance. You yourself said it in your question. That the Qur'an is a book of guidance. It is supposed to guide us. What's the ultimate goal of the Qur'an? To make sure that we secure our akhirah. Okay. The amount that I do understand from the Qur'an, is it enough for me to secure my akhirah or not? Yes, of course it is. Because it's telling you of a life to come. And we all understand all those verses. What happens in the life to come, the pleasures, the hardships, all of that is very clear. It tells us that this is the Prophet you have to follow. Go by every word he says. This is how Allah is. These are the characteristics and traits of Allah and so on. All of these things that we need to act upon to be able to secure our akhirah, we understand that part. These are the intricate details of the Qur'an that we're not getting. They don't play a direct role in our felicity, in our akhirah, in our ultimate deliverance and salvation. They don't. Should I go through the list again? Knowing why the hoopoe can speak about these things doesn't necessarily have much to do with my guidance. Allah being the Nur of Samawati wal Ard, okay, I know that He's Sami', I know He's Qadir, I know He's Basir, I know all of these things, but how He's Nur of Samawat, I don't know. Okay, it's alright, you don't know, fine. I do know that He's all powerful, one. I know that He will hold me accountable if it was my fault and I didn't listen, two. And I know there will be a time that He will do that, three. I know all of this through the Quran, is that not enough? But I want to know why the hoopoe sound like that. Or talk like that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have that much to do. But yes, to know why, to know some more details will contribute to us appreciating this Qur'an more. To be able to take out as many lessons as we can from it will help us more. Give us more motivation. Yes, we have no excuse. Even reciting and reading the translation of it regarding those decisive verses, the ones that we do understand, that should be enough to give us somewhat of a connection with the Qur'an. somewhat. It's not like we don't understand any of it. Nonetheless, to understand these details, there's something else involved. Now, this is something that when we're young, we haven't heard about much. Nowadays, we might have heard about it more. Personally, when I was small, I didn't know there was such a thing. It's called tafsir. To understand the Quran and these questions to be answered, that's where the mufassirin come into play. Mufassir means a person who does and practices tafsir. What does tafsir mean? Tafsir literally means, if there's a curtain on something, to pull that curtain up. There's a curtain as if covering what exactly Allah means by certain things. Tafsir, the job of it is to lift this. How? I call it detective work. I call it paying attention to every clue you can find in other verses, in the same verse, the context, and so on. Putting different verses together to come to a conclusion. Not to just look at one verse and draw a conclusion from it, as those haters do when they want to hate on the Quran. The Quran itself teaches us this method. The Quran itself tells us, in the beginning of Surah Al-Imran, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, in the beginning it talks about two different types of verses the Quran has. Some that are very clear, others that have to be bounced off of other verses of the Quran. Or you have to go to those who have ilm, rasikhuna fil ilm, they're well versed in knowledge to understand their interpretation. And then the verse goes on to say, some people though, they don't do this. They just look at the literal meaning of every verse and it says, these people are after fitna. Fitna. Tafsir's job is to come and take care of this problem. Now, some people acknowledge that translation is not enough. Some people don't acknowledge this. I want to move a step further now. Some people acknowledge that yes, there needs to be tafsir. How do we do tafsir now? Who do we go to for tafsir? What is the methodology that has been sanctioned and allowed in Islam? And where are the red lines drawn when it comes to tafsir? That is something that we have a hadith for. And even if we didn't have a hadith for, we could understand it ourselves. One thing that is very, very, very scolded Islam, in Islam, is the concept of at-tafsir bil-ra'i. To do tafsir with your own whim, on your own whim. You feel like this might be the answer to the question. This might be the meaning. What's your reasoning for it? I feel like this is what the answer is. This will cause you problems in this life and in the next. These people who do tafsir bil-ra'i, they go the whole nine yards. I don't have a problem with those who feel that translation is enough. Okay, we'll talk, we'll sit down and talk. But some people do tafsir bil-ra'i. When it comes to tafsir of Qur'an, you have to go to the sources. You have to go to the greats. Inshallah, these nights that we're going to be here, all I want to do is to just get us familiar with the greats, what they say. I'm not going to be saying anything myself, except very seldom, maybe. There are some that you hear. Now, I'm going to give you an example of tafsir bil-ra'i. I don't know how much time I have, because... Okay, so I can't give an example of that. I'll give this example tomorrow. It's very important. That tafsir bil-ra'i, how today, stuff that I'm hearing here and there, some might be sheikhs, some might not be sheikhs, I don't know, I don't care, whatever, it doesn't matter who's doing it. Tafsir bil-ra'i will destroy your dunya and akhirah, one, and it will destroy the dunya and akhirah of others. The deen, the dunya and the akhirah of others. I'll give you an example tomorrow about this, what I mean. And then these nights we're going to be doing proper tafsir, inshallah. My goals, I'll just share with you out of this series, is a couple of things. Let me just share these with you and then I'll end. Number one, first of all, is Ramadan, Shahr Ramadan time. We want an excuse to do Qur'an. This is the best excuse right now to get closer to the Qur'an, to recite Qur'an, to understand what the Qur'an has to say. Because to be honest with you, we don't have that many tafsir lessons out there, tafsir classes out there, lectures on tafsir and so on. They are out there and they're good ones too, some of them. But we can, we'll take what we can get as much as we can. That's one. So that itself is a pro. But the point I want to make is, I want to get this across to us that translation is not enough. Number one on the list. Translation is not enough, brothers and sisters. Are you saying that we shouldn't try to understand the Quran? No, that's what in history, some of the priests of other religions would do. They would keep the people away from the scriptures. That's not what we're after. What we're after is to listen, we can't come to a conclusion just based on translation. This is what I want to get to. How I want to show, inshallah, that there's lots of things in there that we don't pay attention to, but if you look at it the right way, you'll get it. That our mufassirin have done. The diqqah and the concentration and focus that they exert to get these out of the Quran is beautiful. Alright? So what I'm going to have you to do, inshallah, which inshallah you'll do, is go home tonight. Look at Surah Muzzammil, please. Look at the translation of Surah Muzzammil. Let's see how much we understand from it. So that when we start doing tafsir, we see, oh, there's a little bit more to it than just the translation, inshallah. And it's not a very long surah either. It's one of those last surahs, maybe Surah 72 or 73. I think 72 of the Quran. One more thing I want to come to is this. That even when it comes to the great mufassirin, they will tell you sometimes, we don't know what this verse is talking about. We understand what it's saying, as in the literal meaning, the surface meaning, but I can't tell you exactly this is what it's talking about. It might be this, it might be that, or it might be a third thing. Out of these three, I feel it might be this one more, but at the end of the day, I can't say necessarily this is what it's saying. So that we gain this understanding that even our great ulama sometimes get stuck. So, when there's people running around saying that I have this opinion, I have this theory, just like, I don't know, other greats have theories and opinions, we have to look at how qualified this person is to actually sound like this, to have this tone. Because I don't know, Allama Tabatabai didn't have this tone. But you have this tone. From the reports that reach me, okay? I'm not too into these things about what's going on outside and like, who said what and who said this and who did that, whatever. But from the things that I hear, there are people out there apparently that have this tone that I can have an opinion just like Allama Tabatabai had an opinion. Wow, cool. I can have an opinion just like Ayatullah al-Uzma al-Khu'i rahmatullah alayhi had an opinion. These are the red lines I'm talking about. These are what will cause sometimes the deen and dunya of people to be compromised. I will also, inshallah, try to give credit where it's due. So if I give you the tafsir of a verse, I'll say, this is who said it. And to just, you know, to spoil it, right now I'll just say it. It'll be two or three major ones that I'm going to. Allama Tabatabai being the first, because he's the man for it. Allama Tabatabai is the number one mufassir of the Shia world, brothers and sisters. Keep this in mind. Not only is he a mufassir, lots of the Shia thought that we have today, directly or indirectly, owe to him. Allama Tabatabai. And Allama is a word that, you know, I've heard they use it a lot here and there. Now, in the Hausa tradition, Allama is used, one out of every like 10,000 of the ulama is an Allama. Okay? And this is something I stress on. That's why we call him Allama Tabatabai. Not Hujjatul Islam or Ayatullah or whatever. He's one of the greats. Another person I'll be going to is Shahid Mutahhari Rahmatullah Alayh for some points. And whenever we get stuck, we'll go to, you know, the ones that are, you know, like for example, Ayatullah Uzma, Makarim Shirazi's tafsir, Majma'ul Bayan of At-Tabarsi, and so on. Sometimes even, we might even go to the tafsirs of our Sunni brothers, the great tafsirs of our Sunni brothers and sisters. Because, not because we believe the same, we have the same beliefs, but when it comes to tafsir, when it comes to scholarship, all of these things contribute. It has nothing to do with me believing in that school or not believing in that school. No, it has nothing to do with that. Sometimes certain ahadith are there, we have to dissect those ahadith that are there regarding a certain verse. We have to refute maybe even. That's how the scholars do it. Inshallah, if Allah gives us the tawfiq. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.